You may have heard recently with the way things are, or maybe even said it yourself, this phrase, those people. Have you heard it recently in the news? Has it dripped off your tongue? You know, it's different from saying, oh, those people, to those people, right? And one of the things that happens is it exposes our heart, and it exposes what we think about those people. And it also exposes what we think about how the world is working. And one of the things that we do as human beings, we always try to want to figure out what God is doing, how it's doing, because we want a blessing. We want life to be a blessing. But the question that we have here is, do we really know what is a blessing and what is a curse? Because what if what is a blessing, you define a curse? And what if you define a curse as actually a blessing? What are you going to miss out on? What are you going to try and fight against God in hopes that you can gain something that you think is in your best interest? And that's what we're going to be talking about that day. How do you know what is a blessing? How do you know what is a curse? And we hear in this story, this man Balak, who is this guy? He's a king. And the Moabites are people who are descendants from Abraham. Lot, who was Abraham's nephew, he and his oldest daughter had a child, and one of the children is named Moab. And he is got a land just east of the promised land. One of the things he does not know about the promise of God, about the people, or what this promised land, where the lines are. If he knew where the lines of the nation of Israel were going to be set at the time, the land that God had promised them, he wouldn't have any concern about Moab. But why is he concerned? Because in his mind, he has already determined that this people, those people, are a threat. But are they? Well, it's all going to depend. And when we go into life, we have to go into it with a similar way. How are we really going to know that? He goes to a people called Midian. These are people who are also descendants of Abraham. They are children of his second wife. After Sarah dies, he marries again. And the Midianites are part of Abraham's descendants. So here you have family fighting going on, don't you? If they only knew, if they only trusted, if they would only seek God, how different life would be. So one of the things that Balak does, he says, well, you know, I got to get people who think like me. So you know what we often do? When we get this idea of those people, you know what we do? We go find other people who look at those people and say, yeah, those people. You know why we do that? Because we want to be affirmed that the hatred we have for those people are lifted up by other people. And when we do such things, it creates animosity towards people. And we see that animosity, just look at World War II. Isn't that exactly what Hitler had to do to the Jews? He had to get in the people's mind, those people. Didn't he have to get other people to agree? Oh yeah, those people need to be exterminated. Those people are a danger to us. And it's also interesting that people can align with one another, not because they even know each other, care about each other, or want the best for one another. It's all a commonality of those people. If we can hate those people together, then somehow, some way, we feel like we have connection. And Facebook is so good about this. You know, social media, what it does, it sends you all the information with things that you agree with. You think when you look at Facebook that everybody's seeing what you see. That's not the case. The things that you search for are the things that you get. So people who are those people are getting something different from you people. Oh, so what does that do? It creates greater divides, greater hatreds, greater animosities towards one another. And here's Balak. He's thinking, oh, these people, they're a threat to me. What do I need to do? Well, I don't think I can fight them. I need to get other people to support me in this because I'm afraid. He's full of two things. He's full of fear in dread. He's full of what ifs. Have you ever done that? There is no end to what if. Whenever things are going on in your life and you look at what the landscape looks like, you can fill in those blanks with a myriad of different outcomes. And when we live according to the what ifs, then we live now based on what isn't, but what we think might be. And how foolish is that? It's totally foolish. And we're going to see that happening with Balak. We're going to see that happening with the people of God even. And he's full of fear. He's full of dread, full of what ifs. And he's saying those people, and it's dehumanizing language, because when we can dehumanize somebody, we can eliminate them. And we can do bad things to them, and we can say all kind of negative things about them. Instead of embracing their humanity, their God-given likeness, saying, no, God created them. They are made in his image just like I am. We dehumanize them, and we even take their God-like essence away from them. So therefore, I have a right now, when they are doing something I don't like that hinders my blessing, I can take them out. Or encourage someone else to do it so that I don't have to feel bad and I can just cheer them on. One of the other things that he's wanting to do, he's trying to preserve his power in his place. My land, my people. What would happen if these Israelites come through? They devour everything. And isn't that what we hear? A lot of hype. We know what they're going to do. No, you don't. They're going to be a curse. They might be, depending on how you treat them. And it is all contingent on that. And he asked Balaam, come and curse these people so that they won't hurt me. He's not even considering how this group of people might be able to help him. Because what is the nation of Israel to be for the world to begin with? They are to be a light. They are to be a people to guide them to the one and true and only God. So if I call them those people and they need to be exterminated or pushed away, then what happens to me? I don't get closer to the God who's using this people to bless me. In his mind, these people aren't a blessing, they're a curse. But we have to ask ourselves, what and who defines a blessing and a curse? I'd probably ask you, who defines it? You might do the religious answer, well, of course God does. But does he really? When you're asked to do something you don't want to do because you don't see that it could be the right thing, do you submit yourself or do you resist and say, I will do it my way? We see this throughout the history of Israel. God is continuously trying to bless them. And what do? They resist him in their arrogance, thinking they know better. I'm not. Who are you to tell me? And then Moses catches the flack for that. Then we see this other man, Balaam. Often we think about him and his travels. He's more than his travel. He's more than his journey. He's more than his transportation. What he is in this instance, he's a pawn. He's a person stuck in the middle. Have you ever been one of those people? Stuck in the middle between two people who are trying to get something and they use you to get it? And you know what the interesting thing about this? I love what Patrick was saying last week about Esther, that you don't hear about God, but God's in the background. One of the things you don't hear about in these three chapters in Numbers, you don't hear about Israel other than those people. We don't see them interacting with God or Balak or Balaam until chapter 25. And that becomes a disaster for those people. And we'll get there. So what is Balaam there for? Well, I'm going to buy this guide who's a seer, and we know that he can curse people, and we know when he does it, it works. Because I want to manipulate my environment any way I can. Have you ever done that? Done whatever you could to manipulate your environment so that you gain the blessing that you think is actually a blessing? But have you ever done that and it turned out to go really bad because you didn't know how bad this was going to be for you if you actually had it? I have a friend I was talking to a few days ago, and he's got his own business, and he says, you know, I think I'm coming to realize that God knows that if my business became booming, I wouldn't need him anymore. So I'm thankful for the blessing of a struggling business. Can you do that? Can you so get out of yourself and your self-interest to think about what God might be doing through certain situations that actually could keep you from being the person God wants you to be and being close to him? So Balaam, he's said, we'll give you lots of money. And of course, hey, lots of money. People do anything for lots of money. They go against their own character for lots of money. But Balaam, he knew about this God, and he says, I'm going to pray to God and see what God has to say. And God says, you cannot curse these people because I've blessed them. My people that I'm going to bless, no one can curse. But they can turn my blessing into one when they don't listen to me, when they want to do it their own way. Finally, God says, okay, I'm going to let you go down there. And as he's on this donkey and he's traveling along, all of a sudden, God knows his heart somehow, some way. We don't know what's really going on other than this donkey decides not to go where Balaam wants it to. So he starts beating it. And then he goes down another path and he's going along the edge of a wall and he's crushing Balaam. He's like, what are you doing? And he beats it. If I could, I would kill you, he says to the donkey. And the donkey turns around and looks at him and says, why are you doing this to me? And instead of Balaam going, what? He starts having a conversation with this donkey. Who's really the donkey? It's Balaam. Because he can't see or understand that there is an angel of God right before him. His eyes are closed until he accepts the fact that this donkey is telling him, you need to check yourself. Balaam could have said, oh, well, I get to go down there. I can do whatever I want. And God is saying, hey, I know your heart. And I'm concerned for you, Balaam. I'm concerned that you're going to convince yourself that it's going to be okay to curse these people. And the angel of the Lord is standing there, and he finally sees him. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, I guess you're right. So he goes down to Balak with this on his mind, that his path, his choice, the way he thinks he could be blessed, is not the right path. But whatever God is going to bring him to, God is going to bring him through if he trusts him. And that's our challenge. Because if we could just trust that God is going to bless us in spite of how challenging something could be, then we wouldn't have to try to manipulate it. We wouldn't try to have to figure it out. We could just say, well, whatever it is, God's going to see me through it. And it's going to be amazing to see what God does in this circumstance. When Balaam finally meets Balak, he says, I'm just going to tell you, I can't say whatever I want. I can only say what God has given me to say. And one of the things that he says in chapter 23 and 24, Balak says, okay, I'm going to sacrifice seven animals, build seven altars. There's going to be 14 animals ultimately that are sacrificed. Then you go talk to God. Balak, God cannot be bought by your sacrifice. Have you ever tried that one? Have you ever tried to bend God's will to bless you by your assumed and acted out righteousness? Oh, if I pray enough, if I fast enough, if I do this enough, if I do that enough, your heart might not be in it, but it's just a bunch of actions to try to strong arm God to give you the blessing you think you need or deserve. Balaam goes and listens to God, and he says, this is the blessing of these people. They are my people. I brought them out of Egypt. There is nothing that's going to be bad that's going to happen to them. And Balak says, no, you're supposed to curse these people, not bless them. That's what I'm paying you for. He says, here, let's go somewhere else. So they go somewhere else. Same things happen. Sacrifices. Balaam goes and listens. I'm a consistent God, Balaam learns from God. I am a God who, when I promise to bless, I bless. They call this people a hostile nation. They're not hostile. Unless Balak's people start the problem. And I will be with my people in the midst of it. And from them will come great leaders. Oh, no, you're supposed to curse these people. Oh, let's go over here. Let's do it again. One more time. Seven altars, seven sacrifices. And finally, just Balaam is filled with the Spirit of God. And he just praises the people of Israel. And Balak says, you know what just happened here, Balaam? I could have blessed you, and because of your Lord, you will now not receive my blessing. Oh, no. Really? The God who creates everything, you think I'm going to be concerned about that? He's not. But what Balaam doesn't see, or what Balak doesn't see, is that the blessing of the people of Israel could also be his blessing. If he just decided that I want to learn the God of these people, rather than standing up on his arrogance, Balak would have hadn't been rewarded. But he says, no, the Lord stopped it. No, Balak, you stopped it. And how often do we do that to ourselves? How often are we standing in the way of God blessing us because we have it all figured out? We need to be careful about that. But what ends up is the blessing of Israel turned out to be the curse to Balak. Because he just wouldn't submit to God. And we struggle with that too, don't we? Will we submit? We make the statements, you know, I'm going to die for Christ. Are you? When you feel the rebellion of wanting to do it your own way against what you might be asked to do, who are you to tell me? Does that rise up? Who are you, that demeaning language? So the question is, how do you determine what's a blessing and what is a curse? Usually it's, well, if it meets this need in me, it's a blessing. But if it causes pain, suffering, it's a curse. Well, do you realize a couple weeks ago we talked about when Israel was in rebellion against God and he sent snakes in? And they said, take the snakes away, we're rebellious. We don't want to be rebellious anymore. And God says, I'll give you a snake on a stick. Ooh, this isn't the state fair. I don't want a snake on a stick. He says, no, I'm going to make a pole and I'm going to put a snake on it. And whenever you look at the snake, you'll be healed. Well, that's so stupid. Why can't you just take the snakes away? Because if you don't have something that is causing you to trust in me, you won't trust in me. Because you are a rebellious and hard-hearted people. You'll call them stiff-necked. So we have to ask ourselves, when troubles are in our life, are we going to say, oh, God, take it away? Or are we going to say, okay, what might God be doing in this instance to show me I need to continue to trust in him? That I have to die to my own right, my own will, for his sake. There's a story that Max Lucado talks about. It's a woodcutter that has a white horse. He's a poor guy. He's got a son, and they just go to the woods, and they cut out wood every day, and they sell it, but doesn't make a lot of money at it, just gets by. And people say, everybody wants this horse, why don't you sell it? Even the king wanted this horse. They said, you could name your price. He goes, I'm not going to sell this horse. This horse is more than a horse to me. It's special to me. I mean, I just look at it with its splendor and its majesty and strength. I am not going to sell this horse. You are so foolish. Life would be set. All the money you need. Day comes along and all of a sudden the horse isn't in the stable, and the neighbors say, see there, you're cursed. He says, well, wait a minute. All we know is the horse isn't in the stable. Well, somebody obviously had to have come and stolen it, and you could have gotten all the money for it, and now you're going to be even poorer than you were before. You're such a fool. He says, no, no, no. Just all we know is the horse is not here. A few days later, the horse comes back, followed by 12 wild horses. And the people said, oh, you're right. What a blessing this is. He says, no, wait, whoa, 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 wait. He says, all we know is my horse is back and 12 other horses have come with it. We don't know whether it's a blessing or a curse. All we know is what is, not what if. And as the son tried to train the horses, he gets thrown. And what do you think happens? He breaks his legs. Oh, see, these horses that we thought were a blessing are actually a curse. He says, all we know is my son had fallen off the horses and broke his legs. Why is it that you people who only see a fragment always fill out the whole story? You don't know what's going to come of this. You read only one page and you write the whole book. You try to know more than you actually know and then fill in it with guesses. Why do you do that? Well, we do it because we want security, thinking that if we can divine what the future is going to be, then we're going to maneuver around all the challenges. But what if these challenges are exactly what you need to be the person God wants you to be? What if this challenge is something you need to die more to yourself and live more to God rather than living more to yourself and moving further away from God? We only see a little bit. Well, then all of a sudden the nation goes to war. And all the sons and daughters of military age are drafted. And they go off to war. And the people are willing, oh, what a blessing that your son broke his legs. He can't go to war. All of our children, they're probably going to die because this other nation is so powerful. He says, I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse. All I know is my son isn't going to war. All I know is your sons and daughters are. Do we know if it's a blessing or a curse? We don't know. Why do you keep guessing? Why do you always need to fill in the blanks? Why do you always need to draw conclusions? We only know what is before us. Only God knows if this is a blessing or a curse. We must reserve judgment of life's storms until we know the whole story. We don't know the whole story. We know the ending. We know that there will be conquering, but we don't know necessarily how God is going to use the events of this world to shape us, refine us, and be the people who we want to be, who say, I want to be in submission. Do you? Do you want to be in submission? Do the acts of your life say that you want to be in submission? These are questions we have to ask ourselves. One of the things we're always, it's easy for us to do is what Isaiah the prophet says. Woe to the people who call evil good and good evil. Who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes. And that's filling in the blank. Thinking you know what the future holds. You're clever in your own sight. And what we do is we get people that surround us, that common enemy intimacy, that these people to say, yes, I think just like you. We have to ask ourselves, is that really what's in our best interest? This common enemy intimacy doesn't really build fellowship. It's a false sense of community. Dr. Brown says, people are hard to hate close up. So don't hate them. Move in. And isn't that exactly what God did through Jesus for us? And if we are really going to die to ourselves and submit to his will, then we're going to do this. We're not going to point fingers and say, those people. We're going to say, I need to die for those people. I need to live for those people, for their sake, and move close, move in, to understand where they're coming from. But what those people do, it sets up barriers, then we can't be an influence. A great story this week about Zay Jones. He's a receiver for the Las Vegas Raiders, and he and his cousin were in town setting up an apartment, and he was at a store, and a woman who lived there came up to him and said to him, a white woman, "I just want you to know you matter to me," and starts crying. She says, "I'm from Minneapolis, and it's just tragic what's going on. I just want you to know that you matter to me." Didn't know her, didn't know him. He said he hesitated to hug her because she was wearing a mask and practicing social distancing, but he asked her, "Can I give you a hug?" And she just falls into his arms and starts weeping. She goes, "I just want you to know how important it is to me to spread love." He says, "I didn't get her name, but I'm grateful for the encounter." Jones ended his message by asking his the fans to be kind to one another. Beautiful hearts still exist. Be an example of light to others. And if we're really going to submit to Christ, if we're really going to follow his example and come into people's darkness, we can't do it by pointing fingers and say those people. We enter into their experience and get to know those people, so that we understand their stories and we can say, there's a better story you can write for your life. And the story is about Jesus Christ. And we are the church who are there to do that. We're called to be a blessing to people, not a curse. Jesus says, "To you who listen, I say, love your enemy. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you." Because Jesus did it first. Paul reiterates this. It says, Blessed are those who persecute you. Bless them. Do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, because that's where those people ideas come from. Don't be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Oh, those people? Don't be conceited. You think you're better than other people? Really? Compared to God? See, we do that because we want to feel better about ourselves. The only way we can feel better about ourselves is understanding how God feels about us. Because it really doesn't matter what other people think. Do not take revenge, my friends. Leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, "It is mine to avenge, I will repay." On the contrary, if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. If he's in doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. And part of that idea is you'll get them to say, "Oh, my actions weren't right. I want to live more like that person." Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Don't be like the rest of the world and point fingers and look down. Look at other people as objects of God's love. People bearing the image of God. And try to serve them as you have been served. One of the things, the way we have to understand about blessing and curse, is a blessing draws you near God, a curse pulls you away. One of the biggest things we would call a blessing is money. Balaam had an issue. It says, "The love of money is a cause of all kinds of evil. Some people have turned away from what we believe because they want to get more and more money. But they have caused themselves a lot of pain and sorrow." How can that be? Money's the answer to everything. He says, no. But here's a hard one. Jesus says, "Anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds their life will lose their life." We won't lose our life if we're trying to build our life our way. Whoever finds their life will lose it. Whoever loses their life for my sake will gain it. Because that's exactly what Jesus did for us. He lost his life for our sake. We follow his example and lose our life for the sake of others. That's the difference between blessings and curses. So this people of Israel, don't hear much about it. But one of the things is their dependencies are always being exposed by God. One of the things they don't realize is what was going on between Balaam and Balak and all that's going around. They're just living their life. But you know what they do in the meantime? The guys start, and this is kind of instigated, we learn later, by Balaam, who tells the Midianites to, you know, if some of the women go and start talking nice to those Israelite guys, you know, you can really weaken them. Oh, really? Yeah, you just, you know, get the girls to flash their eyes and smile, and these guys will just follow them right along, and you can take them right into your temple of Baal, and you can do your Baal worship and fornicate, and God will not be happy. And you know what happens in chapter 25? These male Israelites got so brazen that the leader of the community is standing there in front of the tabernacle, and here comes a guy with this woman on his arm, going to his tent with her. And I can imagine Moses is just going, are you kidding me? You're going to be right here before me and before the temple of God, and you're just going to throw it in God's face and say, who are you to tell me what I can do? I'm the captain of my life. I don't have to listen to anybody. Those are the attitudes we really got to kill. And that's exactly what happens. That attitude was killed. And the priest who did it said, you stood up for me, God says to him. I'm so proud that you didn't just say, oh, well, it's their life. They can do it their way. The people of God are called to a different standard. The people outside, they're going to do what they want. But he says, today you stood up for me. How often are you standing up for God rather than yourself? Or is it always passed through, what do I need? What do I want? How do I get my right? How do I get my way? The comforts that protect our self-dependency are really a curse. People want, oh, we just want America the way it was. Well, a lot of that is because I did it my way, and I don't have to be challenged with being accepting and trying to talk to people who aren't like me anymore. It's easier for me. That's why I want it the old way. God says, that's not the way I want it. I want you to be a light to those people. I want you to be a hope for those people. And you hear how that term is different when you say those people? It's dripping with love. Is dripping with desire for those people. Because the path they're on is leading them away from God. And unfortunately, the path of the Israelites and oftentimes the church can be about us and not God. So we need to stop focusing so much on receiving a blessing because we really don't know what that is. And rather be a blessing. Because God is coming. And if we're going to claim that we are dying for his sake, we need to realize that when he comes, will he say, well done, good and faithful servant. You died to yourself, you died to your arrogance, and you lived for me. Now come in and live with me and enjoy my blessing. That is the glory God is calling us to. Allow him to kill off anything that stands in your way of loving him with all your heart and all your soul. Let's stand and give God praise.